Welcome back to Quahog 5 News. And now here's Ollie Williams with the Blackie weather forecast. Ollie?
It's going to rain.
Thanks, Ollie.
Stand back. There's a hurricane coming through.
Mother Nature not being too kind to us here on the East Coast this week. First, an earthquake, now a hurricane, as I mentioned to somebody on Facebook. I'm now waiting for the inevitable typhoon and Texas tornado to come barreling through New York City here. This is episode 176 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here on SEScoops.com. It is Saturday, August 27th, 2011, kind of the day before D-Day, the calm before the storm, if you will. Obviously, anybody who lives in the East Coast here in the U.S. is well aware of what's going on with Hurricane Irene, which is Gorilla Monsoon's favorite hurricane, by the way. See if you get that Irene reference there. That's coming through. That's what they say. Category 1, I think, hurricane now, something like that. People taking it very seriously. Windows boarded up, businesses shut down. New York City's public transportation system closed completely for the first time in history. So we'll see what happens when this thing comes in. They say that overnight tonight into the day tomorrow is going to be a really bad time. Let's put it that way. And I figure I don't want to be in a position where I'm recording the sound off in the middle of a hurricane and all of a sudden the power gets knocked out and I just spend an hour yakking for no reason. I think I would seriously go insane. I would lose my mind if that happened. So we're recording a little bit early, just to play it on the safe side, and hopefully I won't get killed or blown away tomorrow or anything like that. I think everything will be just fine. I guess the biggest thing is really just damage from the winds that they're projecting as far as cars and windows and all that type of stuff. I've never been in a hurricane before. I'm sure many of the people listening to this who live in other states have been through this and worse, so perhaps they can relate a little bit more or relay some advice. I think everybody's just overreacting, which they tend to do. People tend to whip themselves into a mass hysteria. Oh my God, we're all going to die, you know, that sort of thing. Armageddon, Henny Penny, the sky is falling. So we'll see. Hopefully it's not that bad. Hopefully the power doesn't get knocked out. And I'm just doing the sound off early as a safety precaution, and I'll have some fun stories to tell when it's all said and done. I did post kind of a funny little photo gallery on Facebook. For those of you who are Facebook friends, you have to go to Facebook.com/TheSolidMonster and friend me on there. Posted some photos, my hurricane survival kit, and some sights and scenes from the supermarket last night, which was just horrendous. I mean, all the people just, you know, hoarding all the bread and water and just, you know. So they'll have a bunch of bread in their house that's going to spoil and pretty much go to waste. Congratulations. So any other hurricane-related photos that I think might be entertaining enough, I may post more on there, so you want to keep check of that gallery on Facebook. The other thing I wanted to do here before we get going is I wanted to thank everybody who made it possible for me to reach 1,000 friends on Twitter. I reached the milestone accomplishment a couple of days ago, and it was at Latino Eddie was the lucky number 1,000th follower for the Solid Monster on there. So I gave him a shout-out because he deserved it. And if you're not on Twitter, I know people, some people are lurkers. They don't necessarily follow you. They just kind of go to the page and they don't subscribe. Or some people are adamantly against Twitter. And when you see the way that certain athletes and pro wrestlers use Twitter, it's not hard to see how Twitter can be used or looked at as something negative. But hey, for the sound off, it's all good. It's only a positive. So even if you join Twitter and just follow one guy, you got to make the Solid Monster that one guy. Twitter.com/Solid Monster is the address to go to. So with that out of the way, quite a newsworthy week in the world of wrestling. Really a newsworthy week just all around. I mean, forget the earthquake and the hurricane and Armageddon and all this stuff. I mean, we have Steve Jobs stepping down as the CEO of Apple. I mean, first we got Vince McMahon relieved of his duties as the chairman of the board. Now Steve Jobs, poor Steve Jobs, forced to resign as the CEO. One can only hope that Dixie Carter sees what's going on here and she feels compelled to get into the game, and perhaps she can resign as president of TNA and get somebody else in charge, but I wouldn't hold my breath on that. So let's get into it here. We had a big episode of Raw this past Monday night as we barrel down the road to Night of Champions, the next big pay-per-view coming up on September 18th in Buffalo. I thought Raw Monday night was a really good show, and there was a lot of debate about this, a lot of back and forth on Facebook during Raw last Monday night, a lot of people who hated the show or hated the ending of the show. I would say it was a really good show, and in fact, it was probably the best overall episode of Raw in many, many weeks. You know, they seemingly solidified two of the top matches for the next pay-per-view. They made their WWE champion look strong. They gave him another clean win, while also allowing him to beat the crap out of Superman at the end of the show. You know, they continued the mystery text message angle with a very effective segment that not only continued the CM Punk Kevin Nash issue, but it also continued the CM Punk Triple H storyline, which is obviously going somewhere big. Even the announcing on this show, which I've been crowing about for most of 2011, was much improved on this show. I mean, if you compare the announcing last week to this week, it's like night and day. I don't know what happened or why. I don't care. All I know is that it was a marked improvement over the way it's been now for just months on end. It's gotten worse in the last couple of weeks, and this was a step in the right direction. The other thing about Raw, because one of the things when the show was over that people were complaining about and they were bitching about and they were moaning about was how CM Punk always buried. CM Punk is buried. Listen, people, Raw continues to be the CM Punk show. Even without the championship, he's all over the show. I mean, on this show alone, he made three separate appearances. Once in the opening segment, once in the middle, and again in the main event. Now, you can argue with the finish of the main event all you want to, but this was not a burial of CM Punk. A person does not have to win every single week or else they're being buried. John Cena could stand to lose a match or two, and if he did, I hardly think anybody would complain that John Cena suddenly was being buried. So just stop. So let's get into it. Let's start with the good. We're going to do the good, the bad, and the ugly here. The best part about the opening segment, I have to say this, besides CM Punk pointing out that John Cena challenging once again for the championship feels like a rerun, the best part about this for me was the Jack Tunney reference that CM Punk dropped. Put that man in the Hall of Fame, damn it. Jack Tunney deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And I, you know, the sad part about it is I know that there's a lot of younger listeners listening to this right now who have absolutely no idea who Jack Tunney is. They have no idea who Jack Tunney is or why I would be so excited to hear his name uttered on television. Jack Tunney was the figurehead president of the WWF. So he would basically be the equivalent to what the modern-day general manager would be, only he was the on-air president for the entire company. And he wasn't the real president, obviously. He was a promoter himself. Him and his brother Frank were wrestling promoters up in Canada. And there was some connection for many years with the Tunneys and the WWF, and Jack Tunney was the on-air president for a number of years, really into the mid-90s, I think, before he left the company. He passed away many years back. I don't think anybody from WWE even attended the funeral. There was some bad blood between him and the company, or him and Vince McMahon. I don't really remember what the nature of it was, but you know, to a generation of people who grew up on the 1980s and early 90s WWF product, Jack Tunney was a very well-known authority figure, very, very much hated, I think, by a lot of the crowd. But, you know, when he had an announcement to make, they would show him sitting in an office somewhere. Because, you know, it wasn't like now where you have to have the president or the GM or the chairman or the COO on every fucking show. Every fucking week it's Triple H coming out at the beginning of the show. Or the GM, you know, shows up three or four times in a show. Jack Tunney didn't show up very often, but when he did, you knew that something big was going down. There was a big announcement to be made, or something to that effect. And whatever, it's just a sign of days gone by as far as what the authority figures used to mean, as opposed to what they mean now, which is not much. So anyway, Alberto Del Rio had a match with John Morrison, beat him clean with the cross arm bar. Pretty good match. Morrison looked good, Del Rio looked good. He took a scary bump over the top rope at one point, out to the floor, and just smacked his head on the padding on the outside. So that probably rattled his brain a little bit. The one thing I shook my head at during this match was there was a German suplex at one point into a bridge when Del Rio dropped John Morrison just right on his neck. I mean, it's not Del Rio's fault that Morrison came back early from neck surgery, but ooh, that made me cringe. you know, for a guy who admits he came back early and he only had 60% mobility in his right arm or something and he was still healing, he took a pretty wicked-looking German suplex in that match. But anyway, very good match. You know what the best part about this was? It was Del Rio's third straight clean win. It was a third straight clean, strong victory over an opponent on TV for Alberto Del Rio. He pinned Rey Mysterio clean on Raw the week before. He had a great match with Daniel Bryan on SmackDown and made him submit to his finishing maneuver. And then he beat Morrison here in this match. Now, you know, this is exactly how he should be booked if you decided to make him your number one guy. You know, he's the WWE champion. And he's a heel, which makes it even more interesting because who is the last heel champion that WWE had that we've seen go over this strongly, this early in their reign? Miz certainly never did. Sheamus? I don't think so. All Del Rio has to do now is just make John Cena tap out to the armbar at Night of Champions. I know. I won't hold my breath on that either. If I do, I would die from asphyxiation. So anyway, this was all good stuff. Moving on here, I really like the Triple H, Kevin Nash, CM Punk segment. It was probably my favorite thing on the entire show, believe it or not. Yes, even with Kevin Nash in the segment. The stuff with Hunter and Nash before Punk came out, yeah, it was okay. It wasn't great. Nash seems to get really rattled when all the mentally retarded peckerheads in the crowd chant, "What?" during his promos, which won't bode well for him in the future unless he learns to adapt the way that R-Truth did later on in the show, or better yet, the way Undertaker did back in the day.
I tell you what, why don't you say what if you like to sleep with your own sister?
That being said, once Punk came out, this thing got a whole lot better. He just exudes such confidence on the microphone, and it totally shows. He referred to Nash as Big Lazy. He made fun of his dye job on his hair, and after all the insults, he just stood there and said, "You know what? I'm done talking. Last week I went easy on you. This week I'm kicking your ass." And with that, the crowd was ready for a fight. Triple H cut him off. Punk went to he went on to insult Triple H's wife, Stephanie, which got a great reaction. Triple H threatened him. Punk told him to calm down. He alluded to the fact that he must keep his cell phone in his wife's purse right next to his balls. And that was a great line. And with that, Nash blindsided Punk with one of his trademark Kevin Nash forearms, which is almost as intimidating as a punch from John Cena. And I love the way that JR reacted to this. It wasn't anything significant or anything like that. It's just one of those things. I went back and I watched the segment, and you almost don't even hear JR, because I think Cole or Lawler kind of reacted over him. But the way that JR reacted to this was just great. Just great. There's something about it I just really loved. Triple H and Nash, they left the ring together at this point. I like how they're continuing the mystery of who sent the text message at SummerSlam. Hunter made it clear it wasn't him, and one would think that by Punk bringing up Stephanie's name, it would disqualify her from the running. So who was it? Well, you know, was it Johnny Ace? Was it Vince McMahon? Was it a drunk Scott Hall just fucking around with Nash in the middle of a bender after the Juggalo show? Who knows? You know, it's wide open for interpretation. I like that. Then we had Evan Bourne and Kofi Kingston beating David Otunga and Joe Hennig. I refuse to call him by that stupid name any longer, so from here on out, he's Joe Hennig, to win the WWE Tag Team titles. I'm putting this in the good category, not because the match was anything special, and you know, God knows the tag belts don't mean shit in this company, but I like how they made their win seem like a big deal. You know, between the post-match celebration and them getting showered in champagne backstage after the match, just like what they did with Mysterio when he won the WWE title. You know, they don't have any challengers, of course, but hopefully the rumors of Triple H wanting to focus more on the tag division have some element of truth to them. You know, the Kings of Wrestling, Claudio Castagnoli and Chris Hero, could have some great matches with these two guys if they do, in fact, come over to WWE, which it sounds like they are. The other thing during this match, and I know I should be putting this in the bad category, but I won't. Once again, on commentary, as good as the commentary was this week compared to past weeks, it was not flawless. But once again on commentary, Otunga and Hennig were buried as being boring. And I ranted about how stupid that was last week when they did it, but the more I think about it, I say good. Otunga is boring. You know, and I'm sorry, Mr. Manigo of our podcast here, but he is. David Otunga is boring. He stinks. As for Hennig, Maybe what he needs is to disappear for a while, you know, and then get a fresh start back with his real name. Don't hide the fact that he's second generation. Embrace it. I mean, he's the son of Mr. Perfect, for crying out loud. I'm not saying I want to see them do with him what they did with Ted DiBiase by turning him into a carbon copy of his father. But he's a talented guy who deserves better than this. You know, yeah, he was one half of the tag team champions. What good does that do when your babyface announcer in Jerry Lawler is burying you on commentary every week? So you know what? I put this in the good category. Hopefully this leads to some sort of change and something positive can come from this. Speaking of positive, yeah, the Miz R-Truth segment, which entertained the hell out of me on this show, I must say. First, they ambushed Santino Marella as he was making his way down to the ring. And to the people moaning, oh, they buried Santino, it's not a burial if you're not on television anyway. It would be like Zack Ryder showing up on Raw and losing a match. It's not technically a burial. He's just not getting a push of any kind. Although I guess he's sort of on SmackDown now, but that's beside the point. So, Miz and Truth, they beat up Santino. They come to the ring for a joint promo. Truth had to contend with the annoying what chance from the retards in the crowd that have now become part of his shtick. But he handles it pretty well, I will say. He had a great line here that made me laugh during this promo when he talked about Triple H and all the WWE suits getting together at the conspiracy table to conspire against them. Because, of course, that's what you do at the conspiracy table. You conspire. I wonder if I can pick me up one of those tables at IKEA. I've got a few people at my office I wouldn't mind conspiring against. But anyway, Miz said that he believes Truth now. He sees things for how they really are, how there really is a conspiracy going on. Miz said he went from headlining WrestleMania 27 to being a pitch man for Subway sandwiches. So they talked about pooling their forces together, basically, until they get what they want. Truth's old music came on, only this time he supplied new lyrics where he basically told the fans they suck. Miz joined in. This was actually quite great. Miz just has no place right now in the WWE title picture, so it's just the way it is. And with Punk, Triple H, Nash, and their whole storyline, this is pretty much as good as it's going to get for The Miz, unless he moves to SmackDown. So for the time being, if he can stay this entertaining, I'm fine with this. In the main event, we had another John Cena CM Punk match, who, surprise, surprise, they had another really good match. It wasn't Chicago, but in some ways I thought it may have been better than their SummerSlam match in LA. Before the bell, Cena threw his shirt into the crowd, only to get it thrown right back at him. So, shades of One Night Stand 2006 all over again at the Hammerstein Ballroom. Cena finally found a member of the C-Nation who gladly snatched his t-shirt up and no doubt will pray to and worship it until the day they die in a hail of gunfire while robbing a bank. There's a lot of great near falls in this match. Punk kicked out of the Attitude Adjustment. Cena kicked out of the GTS. I would save stuff like that personally. You know, the constant kicking out of finishers and such for pay-per-view matches only, but that's just me. I absolutely love that flying knee to the face off the ropes that Punk delivered towards the end of the match. Some people said they went back and watched the match on YouTube, and when they showed the replay, they weren't even sure Punk's knee connected with Cena, but that's what was so great about it. When you can make it look so vicious and wicked and real, but you don't even touch your opponent, that's good stuff right there. So that was really cool. Punk went for the victory when Kevin Nash appeared with a microphone in hand after supposedly being involved in a car accident a short time earlier, we had been told. So here's Nash coming out, and Punk telling Punk this wasn't over yet. So instead of going for the win, Punk allowed himself to be distracted like an idiot, and Cena delivered an attitude adjustment for the win because Cena is a heel at heart, and he'll take a victory any way he can. He's like Hogan back in the day during the heyday of Hulkamania. He always had heel tendencies. You know, the way he would rake his fingernails down an opponent's back or rake their eyes. So anyway, with this victory, shockingly enough, I know, John Cena will challenge Alberto Del Rio for the WWE Championship at Night of Champions. Del Rio, who was sitting ringside watching the entire match, as was John Laurinaitis, attacked Cena from behind, beat him down to end the show. Laurinaitis and some referees tried to hold Del Rio back, but he would have none of that. And he kept breaking free and kicking Cena some more. This was great. I mean, anytime John Cena gets his ass handed to him at the end of the show, how could you hate a show like that? Come on, people. Last thing I want to mention here in the good category, I want to mention it again, the announcers. They deserve some recognition here. You know, Cole, Lawler, Ross, they work so much better as a three-man booth this week than they have maybe ever. Cole was noticeably toned down, and I'm sure that wasn't by accident. JR had more time to speak and help some of the angles get over. You know, if Cole keeps his shtick to a minimum and they can give us more of this each week, I won't have to complain about the announcers ever again. It made the show so much more tolerable, so much more enjoyable, save for some odd comments made by Jerry Lawler during the main event, which I'll get to in a second. So let's talk about some of the bad, because it was not a perfect show. Alex Riley beat Jack Swagger in a match that I could not possibly have cared less about. Just impossible for me to care less about this match. Riley had some momentum coming off his split with The Miz, but whatever he had, it's gone now. Vicky Guerrero was managing Swagger for this match, and Dolph Ziggler, I guess, took great umbrage to this because he sauntered down to the ring, Dolph did, during the match, and had a shouting battle with Vicky. And for some reason, we saw Dolph shove Vicky to the ground, or, you know, at least it appeared that way. Perhaps it was an accident. I don't know. It just came off as very contrived. Riley rolled Swagger up for the pin off the distraction, and that was that. The less I say about this, the better. The other thing I want to mention here is, really, another car accident storyline? Is this necessary? I mean, I was hoping after the ridiculous Bret Hart one during the build-up to his WrestleMania match with Vince McMahon that we would be done with these stupid angles, but apparently not. And yes, it did turn out to be a swerve, but still, no more car accidents in wrestling. Although I do wonder, somebody mentioned this, and it actually made me wonder if perhaps this was some sort of rib on Matt Hardy. I don't think it was, but some food for thought there. And lastly here, Jerry Lawler. God bless Jerry Lawler. He made some awkward statements during this show, which just reeked of Vince McMahon. He obviously kidnapped the King's right ear during this main event match and held it for ransom. So first, during the main event, out of nowhere, mind you, Lawler takes a negative tone while talking about CM Punk and how Punk is really not all that good. This is what he said. Punk's not all that good, and how Punk needed Mr. McMahon, his distraction at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, and at SummerSlam he needed Triple H's bad call to beat John Cena. Where the hell did that come from? And then later on during the same match, Lawler refers to Canada as Bizarro Land because the fans have the audacity to cheer for Punk and boo Cena as though this never happens anywhere else in the world. No, of course not. Only in Canada. Vince has this ridiculous habit of referring to Canada as Bizarro Land. He's done this for years. You know, he'll have the announcer say, well, you know, that's the Canadian fans. We're in Bizarro Land. You know, he does that every time the crowd reacts opposite to what they want. And oddly enough, you never hear the crowds in New York or L.A. or Chicago being called Bizarro. Just the Canadians. Not sure why. And as far as the ugly category, guess what? There was none on this show. There was nothing on this show that I can sit here and say was really, truly ugly. You know, there was a lot of good, there was some bad, but there was nothing on this show that offended me or really pissed me off or anything like that. And for that reason alone, thumbs up to Raw for Monday night. All the people who complained and said this show was terrible, this and that, look, we got plenty of Raw shows that we can say that for, whether it's the announcing, whether it's the booking, whether we have some crap-ass matches. This was not a show to complain about. I don't know why everybody was I shouldn't say everybody, but there were more people than I would have expected who were not fond of the show, and I think it's just because of the way that the main event ended. You know, Cena won, he's the number one contender. Yes, it sucks. Yes, it is a repeat, but that does not mean Raw sucked on Monday night. It did not. SmackDown on Friday night emanated from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Hat tip there to Lance Storm. So they brought Bret the Hitman Hart in to be the guest general manager for one night only. So now Bret Hart has officially been the GM on both Raw and SmackDown. And I guess both reigns as GM have been very brief. I think he may have been GM on Raw for literally 2 weeks, if that. And this was just a one-time thing on SmackDown. He came out, got a big pop, obviously, in Canada, in Calgary, of all places. And he did some stuff at the beginning of the show with Christian. Then Mark Henry came out, Sheamus came out. All that stuff. you know, it was good to see Bret Hart. I haven't seen all of SmackDown yet, so I can't comment on the entire show from start to finish. I saw some key segments. The Christian-Daniel Bryan match was great. No surprise there. Sin Cara and Heath Slater. I just want to bring this up because there were reports earlier in the week that Mystico, the original Sin Cara, was back from his suspension, which his suspension is now over. And so the belief was that it was him in the role against Heath Slater. And apparently at the SmackDown tapings, there were a lot of botched spots in their match to the point where they actually had to come back out later in the show to effectively redo their match in 2 minutes. So obviously Vince McMahon was not pleased. And now comes word that apparently it was not the original Sin Cara in that match with Heath Slater on SmackDown. It was the replacement Sin Cara, who has been played by Hunico for the last few weeks. And the original Sin Cara was backstage in Calgary at the SmackDown taping, met with Vince McMahon and WWE officials, and then either was, I don't know that he was sent home, but I guess he left at that point. I don't think that he's been officially released as of yet, but the belief is that he is done with WWE. So after all the fanfare and everything about Mystico, and to a lot of people, especially the younger, you know, the kids and all that who are buying up the Sin Cara merchandise, they're not going to know the difference one way or the other. But it's still a pretty big deal if this is how it goes down, because it wasn't just the mask. It's the guy under the mask. Mystico was to Mexico for the last 5 or 6 years, for all intents and purposes, what John Cena has been to WWE. He was the man. And as a performer, he's an amazing performer. You know, he's a smaller guy than Hunico. Physically, there is a difference between the two of them. Some people realized it, some people didn't. But he could do things in that ring that even the new Sin Cara can't do. And that's a shame. And if this is how it ends, I don't know where he goes from here. You would certainly think the way he left, CMLL down in Mexico, that he perhaps burned a bridge. I don't know that he would go to TNA. I don't even know that they could afford him, quite frankly. So I don't know where he goes from here. He may have fucked himself, but I just wanted to point that out, that it was not the original Sin Cara in that role on SmackDown, and going forward, it looks like the original Mystico is done with WWE. At least that's how it appears right now. And I say this now as the, I don't know if you can hear that, but the rain is just crashing down now. Hopefully this is not an early start to the storm. I was of the impression this hurricane weather wasn't hitting this part of New York here for another 6 or 7 hours, so hopefully the power stays on as I record the sound off here. A couple of other notes. I have to give some updates on the Matt Hardy story. I thought I had said all that needed to be said last week, and then just when you think things are about to quiet down, it's just unbelievable. Just to give an update on the charges that Matt Hardy is facing, he is scheduled for a September 28th hearing in regards to his most recent arrest. According to the Moore County records in North Carolina, he is being charged with driving while impaired and exceeding safe speed while driving. And I'll go in chronological order here because there's so much that's happened with this poor fucker in the last week. So those are the charges that he's facing. And couple of days after, you know, that original story broke, he finally broke his silence and posted a message on his YouTube page regarding his car accident. And this is what he said. Quote, "When the side windows glass smashed into my face, arms, and neck, some of the blood that did felt almost angelic. I went from being afraid to die to feeling like I was almost being reborn with some sort of an absolute pure life force. It was the most amazing thing I've ever experienced. I felt like I just received the blood of an angel flowing inside me. I know this sounds crazy. Due to these, I only have urges now to help people, and miraculously, all of my vices are gone." End quote. Yep. Just like that. Poof. All of his vices are gone. Well, I certainly hope they are. Just to give a few more details that came out subsequent to this, the Fayetteville Observer, which is a newspaper in North Carolina, quoted a state trooper who said that Hardy had not been drinking alcohol when the crash occurred. He was driving his 2009 Corvette back on the 20th. Hardy had claimed on his YouTube channel subsequent to the accident that the breathalyzer registered nothing, which is correct, but far from the whole story. And the trooper said that Hardy had appeared to have been taking, quote, some type of impairing substance, end quote. He asked Hardy for a blood sample. Hardy complied. He was driving up to 70 miles an hour when he went off the road and hit a pipe and a tree. So just to flesh out the details of the accident, that's what happened. Doesn't appear alcohol was involved, although he is known to have had alcohol issues of late. But even more troubling is that the trooper said he was taking some type of impairing substance, which, you know, it could be anything. You know, is it pain pills, somas, is it something more sinister? I guess we'll find out, because he did submit a blood sample, although that sort of stuff takes a while to come back. Anyway, after all of this, we find out that prior to his arrest last weekend, Hardy apparently had been recently cited for reckless driving and is scheduled for an October 11th hearing for that matter. So, in fact, he basically ran into trouble with the law even before this accident, and now he has not one but two court hearings coming up due to various, I guess we could say, driving infractions, shall we say. Meanwhile, his girlfriend, Rebby Sky, on her Formspring account, when she responded to a fan question about Matt, she said, "The only reason he's still alive is because of me." And when asked how she felt about the entire situation, she wrote, "Hurt, exasperated, exhausted, furious, tired of being lied to, tired of enablers, just tired." So apparently she is not the only person tired of Matt Hardy's antics. Even his own girlfriend, his own friends. You know, in an interview with Brian Fritch, Shane Helms even voiced concerns about Matt. He claims that Jeff Hardy has actually gotten himself together now, but it seems that the shoe is on the other foot with Matt, and he is genuinely concerned. So you would think that when your own friends publicly are going public in interviews and tweets about their concern for your well-being, it's usually a bad sign. You can't blame the dirt sheets for that. You can't blame TMZ for that. So then on Wednesday, speaking of TMZ, TMZ reported that Matt was rushed to the hospital after falling in his home. It was believed to have been, he is believed to have fallen down the stairs, is all I've heard. And he was in the hospital. I don't know, he may still be in the hospital for all I know, but what I do know is he is back on Twitter, and he is talking about how today, Saturday, as I record this show, today is the day that he is reborn, says Matt Hardy. Whatever. Just for his sake, I said it last week, I'll say it again. At one point, it was funny to poke fun at him because he made it so easy. The things he would say, the things he would do, the stupid videos he would put up. It was funny. It was the in thing to make fun of Matt Hardy and hope that at some point he realizes people are not laughing with him, they're laughing at him, and perhaps he would change his ways. And now, it's to the point where it's not even funny. It's just sad. You know, the video of him in his home looking like he's about to pass out with all of his belongings strewn about the home, and it looks like he basically ransacked his own home. And I don't know if he is doing some sort of storyline in his videos where he is auditioning for, you know, Paranormal Activity 4 when it comes out next year. You know, he did that other video with the so-called entity, the ghost in his home. He blames the entity for his house being trashed. Whatever it is, he needs to stop. He needs to stop. You know, just like Jeff Hardy. At least Jeff Hardy, for the most part, has been pretty quiet over the last several months since he left TNA television. You know, Jeff still has those drug charges hanging over his head. He's somewhat smart enough to know that perhaps I shouldn't be on the internet saying and doing stupid shit. Matt apparently just never got the memo. And now he's got two court dates coming up, and he's posting shit like this on the internet. So, for his sake, I hope he's better. You know, he says his vices are all gone, just like that. I find that impossible to believe, but you know what? Hey, as long as he does what he has to do to get himself better, that's all that matters. Because as far as I'm concerned, this Matt Hardy story does not have a happy ending. You know, I did a podcast a long time ago talking about Jake Roberts and Scott Hall. I gave Jake Roberts 5 years to live. And that was probably back in 2008 that I said that. And thankfully, Jake Roberts has been out of the news of late. He's alive and kicking. And that's one prediction that I hope I was wrong about. Although there's still time for that. And the fact that I feel compelled to lump Matt Hardy into that same category of guys who were at the top of the wrestling death pool is absolutely ridiculous. All things considered, the guy has had a pretty blessed life. He made a very good living for himself. You know, he's been fired from TNA, but I'm sure he's not hurting for money at this point. He's got a hot-ass girlfriend. He's surrounded by a lot of friends and family who care about him. He seemingly has just thousands of loyal minions on the internet following him on Twitter and YouTube and all this. There's no reason for the guy to be in the condition that he's in right now. So, for his sake, let's hope he gets the help he needs. And these Matt Hardy videos, though, they've got to stop. I mean, it's to the point of just pure embarrassment. And I don't need to see another Matt Hardy video, but I have a feeling we have not seen the end of them. Update on the condition of Rey Mysterio. He was diagnosed with a torn ACL in his bad knee. Well, I guess both knees are bad, but in the knee that's been operated on about six times before. And he was scheduled to undergo reconstructive knee surgery on Friday. So that would be yesterday. No word yet as far as how the surgery went. I hope and assume it went just well. But he is expected to be out anywhere from 6 to 8 months. You know, whenever you have any sort of reconstructive knee surgery, you know, it does not bode well for your chances of coming back very quickly. So, yeah, 6 to 8 months for Rey Mysterio. Touch and go for WrestleMania. He may not be able to make it back for the show in Miami in April, which would suck for him if that were the case, but we shall see. But yeah, Mysterio is off the Raw brand, and that's a big blow to the Raw brand. The Money in the Bank buy rate has been the topic of discussion over the last couple of days. The initial report had the pay-per-view doing 276,000 pay-per-view buys. And everybody said, wow, that was, you know, easily like 100,000 or more better than what they did last year. And it's all CM Punk. And, you know, what a wonderful number for a B-show pay-per-view to get. And, in fact, that was an errant report that is not correct. Money in the Bank did 185,000 total pay-per-view buys, 132,000 of which were domestic. And the 276,000 number quoted in those reports includes about 70,000 buys extra, I guess, because they estimated low on WrestleMania. Mania actually did considerably better than they thought as of a few weeks ago. So, you know, hate to say it, but Dwayne 1, Punk 0, as far as that goes. The number was actually up 13%. From what Money in the Bank did last year, but it's still less than the 20% that Vince McMahon and the company had expected. You know, and last year's Money in the Bank also did not air in the UK on pay-per-view, so you can't use that as an excuse for anything. So basically, Money in the Bank did better than it did last year, but nowhere close to what people had hoped, what people had expected, or what that original report had indicated. And you just have to give credit where credit is due. You know, Rock, CM Punk in his own promos even rags on The Rock and says it just makes him sick that Dwayne is in the WrestleMania main event next year and he's not. And look, Punk is the workhorse in that company right now. He and John Cena, they've been going out there, tearing it up, having great matches. Punk deserves everything and more. And frankly, I would love to see Punk and Steve Austin in a match next year. And the more that I hear about their bickering back and forth on Twitter, and it was funny, even William Regal saw the back and forth joking and bickering between Punk and Austin. And he tweeted and said, listen, the two of you, just fight and get it over with at this point, please. And then Austin doing interviews talking about, you know, he's leaving the door open. It has to make sense for him creatively. It has to make sense for him financially. And Punk would be his opponent. I am convinced if Austin comes back for a match, Punk is his opponent. That's it. I feel as though the decision's already been made. Ultimately, it's up to Austin and also up to the WWE doctors. You know, I said Edge was told, and Edge supposedly has the exact same spinal condition or injury that Steve Austin had. And the two of them have been in contact a lot over the years, and Austin was a great source of help for Edge. And Edge did that interview a couple weeks back before SummerSlam, and he was asked, hey, do you think Steve Austin might come back? And Edge said, well, you know, I can't speak for Steve, but the reality is, if his condition and my condition are identical, the WWE doctors, at least under the current wellness program, have told me that under no circumstances would they ever clear me, that being Edge, for a match ever again. His career is over. There is no more comeback matches or anything like that, at least not in WWE. And so if that's the case, why then would we expect that the WWE doctors would clear Steve Austin for a match and not Edge? See, that tells me that their conditions are not identical, or if they are, and Austin and Punk and Vince McMahon and all these people are hoping to do the match, they may be in for a rude awakening. So that's another interesting little caveat there to keep in mind. as far as a potential Austin Punk match. Even if the parties come to some sort of agreement, if everything is done on the up and up and Austin undergoes physical testing and they say, well, you know, you've got a narrowing of the spinal column and we can't clear you, then there is no match. But my point is, Punk deserves a main event level match at WrestleMania. Perhaps it will be against Steve Austin. Perhaps it'll be against Chris Jericho. Perhaps it'll be against somebody else. But you cannot argue at the impact that The Rock had on the WrestleMania buy rate this year and is going to have on the WrestleMania buy rate in his hometown next year. Ticket sales, pay-per-view buys, they're all going to be up. Maybe even higher than this year's Mania, and this year's show broke a million buys worldwide. The Rock gets a lot of credit for that. So for people like Punk who, you know, in his promos, I believe Punk really believes that. There are wrestlers in the locker room who resent The Rock because they feel, you know, he took a spot on the show that could have gone to somebody else. Or, I mean, look, you can argue that The Rock segments went too long. The Rock didn't really do much at WrestleMania. It was actually quite a disappointment. I don't blame The Rock entirely for that. You know, he did what was scripted into the show for him to do. He wasn't wrestling a match, so he was only going to do so much. But the reality is, all these people that love to crow about, you know, The Rock, and The Rock made a lot of people a lot of money, including a lot of wrestlers who are bitching right now. They probably don't even realize that The Rock made them a lot more money than they would have made had he not been at WrestleMania this year. And he's going to make them a lot more money next year, being that he's wrestling. So, I love CM Punk. I respect the hell out of him. He absolutely deserves a high-profile match at WrestleMania. But the Money in the Bank buy rate, when you compare it, again, WrestleMania did better than everybody expected. Money in the Bank did worse. There's a lot of reasons for that. It doesn't just boil down to it's not all CM Punk's fault, and you know, The Rock doesn't get all the credit for WrestleMania doing so well, because at the end of the day, it's WrestleMania. But I just wanted to mention that, because I've seen even fans who have gotten in on the debate here and there, and I just wanted to point that out, the hypocrisy in that whole scenario. That is, though, you know, The Rock is doing some sort of harm to WWE. He's holding younger guys down. He's you know, harming business in some way, which is just complete bullshit. He's doing just the opposite. Talk a little bit about Impact Wrestling here. I did not watch Impact on TV this week, thank God. Read some of the reviews. Sounded like a fucking awful show, but I didn't watch it, so I'm not going to review it bit by bit. But Jeff Hardy. Let's talk a little bit about Jeff Hardy here, shall we? The Hardys are in the news a lot of late. And I cannot, if I'm Dixie Carter and TNA, boy, I guess I cannot think of a better time to bring back Jeff Hardy, who we suspended so many months back after his just despicable performance at Victory Road, coming out probably stoned or drugged out of his freaking mind. He says these drug charges still hanging over his head. In fact, he's going back to court on September 8th, I'm sure, for his next court continuance. So what better time to bring Jeff Hardy back than, or announce that he's coming back, than the week that we fire his brother from the promotion because of similar issues? What perfect timing on TNA's part. Just impeccable. I guess the original plan was TNA had hoped to bring both Hardy boys back together sometime in the next 2 months. And when they fired Matt, obviously those plans went out the window, and so they decided to rush Jeff Hardy back to television now. Plus, I think they're releasing some sort of Jeff Hardy DVD in the coming months. So, on Thursday, TNA had TV tapings in Huntsville, Alabama. This was the first of a couple of road tapings. TNA getting out of the Impact Zone, which I have been in favor of for the longest time now. The Impact Zone is so played out, it's just they gotta get out of that building and get on the road and just make themselves look more professional, just change the scenery up a little bit. You know, they did that show on the road from Fayetteville back in February that people raved about. It looked different, it felt fresher. So they had tapings in Huntsville on Thursday. And this is the second time now that they've held road tapings on a Thursday. All the weekdays to choose from. Why would you pick the night that your television show airs? You're just competing against yourself. It just doesn't make any sense. They did that in February also. You mean to tell me that of all the other nights of the week, all the weeknights, that it has to be done on a Thursday? These are taped shows. They're not airing live. You're taping your fucking show on the same night your television program airs. the people who actually come out to a TNA show are probably just made up mostly of diehard fans, and you're telling them to miss the TV show so they can come to a live taping of a show that's not airing for another week or two. It just doesn't make sense. So anyway, TNA sources, they pegged the attendance at somewhere in the 3,000 to 4,000 range, much higher than expected. Apparently, a lot of walk-up at the building the day of the show. They did not look like they were going to do a lot of people. I think it's a building that fits 10,000. They had about maybe 2,000 tickets sold. So at least if it's 3,000, 3,500, at least that's a little bit better. So Jeff Hardy went on his Twitter page earlier in the week. I mentioned Jeff coming back. He made the announcement on his Twitter page, and apparently it pissed a lot of people in TNA off. They wanted to wait, keep it as a surprise, and I mean, which is just incredibly dumb anyway, because you're taping a show with Jeff Hardy's return. It's going to come out anyway. So he said, "It's official, time to go back to work. I will be in Huntsville on Thursday with Impact Wrestling." And mind you, I said before, Jeff's next court date is set for September 8th. Okay? Think about that, because Jeff Hardy makes his return not on the coming Impact taping from Huntsville, but the second week of tapings, which will air, wait for it, on September 8th. So if by chance this next court date for Jeff actually turns out to be some sort of bad day for him, and it's anything other than a continuance, it is conceivable that Jeff Hardy could either... I don't know if he would be sentenced that day. I guess he could be sentenced. It'd be kind of funny if Jeff Hardy actually showed up on the 8th and got sentenced to, like, 3 years in jail on the day that his return is airing on television. LOL, TNA. That's all I have to say about that. The Impact taping on the 8th ended with Jeff coming out to cut a promo. The storyline is that the network, that's right, the dreaded network, allowed him some time to come out and address the audience. And he mentioned the Victory Road pay-per-view where he had issues. He commented that he let the fans down, he let the company down, he let other wrestlers down. Certainly let Sting down, that's for sure. He said he understood that he might not be forgiven, but he asked everyone to give him one more chance, because God knows Jeff Hardy has not had any chances in the past. This is only his second, right? So he begs people to give him a second chance. The crowd in Huntsville, of course, they got behind him. They chanted one more chance at the guy, and he just walked off. He put the microphone down in the ring, and he exited. So that's how Impact is going to end in 2 weeks. And sorry, I didn't mention spoiler alert, but there you go, spoiler alert. So that's the deal with TNA. I'm not going to go through the rest of the tapings. You can find them online if you're interested in finding out what the hell happens on this show. I'm most curious to see what it looks like in Huntsville. I am totally in favor of them going on the road. It has absolutely nothing to do with their awful creative. The company is just boring as shit right now. They're just spinning their wheels. It feels like nothing ever happens in this company. Things happen, people turn, there are swerves, and they don't mean a goddamn thing. Apparently, I think Mr. Anderson was just beaten down and kicked out of Immortal, and you would think would be off television for a while. And spoiler, apparently at the tapings he comes back. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Their problems go far deeper than just leaving the Impact Zone. But leaving the Impact Zone, at least on some weeks, it's a step in the right direction. They absolutely should do more of that. And we'll see how it looks when it airs next week. They tape two shows from there. The first one will air next Thursday. And one last TNA note here. Jimmy Yang, just to update a story I mentioned a couple weeks back, he wrote on Twitter this week that he had finally been paid by TNA. He said, better late than never. So Jimmy Yang now can take the $76 or whatever he made from TNA that day, and he can be a happy man. So I was happy to hear about that. Last story here, just want to mention that Todd Grisham has left WWE for ESPN. He worked for WWE for many years. In fact, I think he started with the company around 2004. He was a backstage interviewer. He was a lead announcer for the ECW show on Sci-Fi. He was a lead announcer on SmackDown for a certain period of time until Vince McMahon got tired of him. And I think he had been doing NXT with William Regal, if I'm not mistaken. He used to be the host of a show called Bite This on WWE.com, which was most funny because if you go on YouTube, you can actually find the segments. It would be Grisham by himself in a studio hosting this WWE live web show and taking live phone calls from fans, and which is a dangerous proposition when it comes to wrestling fans. So there would be people that would call in and they would drop references to TNA or TNAWrestling.com, and Grisham would just go off on TNA. I mean, he would say things that you would never hear an announcer say on television. he was not a fan of these TNA attacks on WWE's own show. So that was kind of funny. I think you could still find that on YouTube. But anyway, he's leaving. He is following in the footsteps of another former WWE announcer alum in the coach, in that he is going to ESPN. And, you know, best of luck to him. I thought Grisham was okay. I was never a huge fan of Todd Grisham. I mean, I personally think somebody like Scott Stanford has a lot more upside and potential as an announcer in WWE than Grisham did. And part of that is that Stanford, not just that he's so entertaining in those Zack Ryder videos online, which he is, but I know Stanford locally here in New York. He's actually a sports announcer, a sports anchor on the local NBC affiliate, Channel 4, here in New York. I mean, he is an Emmy Award-winning journalist. He's the real deal. And he's pretty good. You know, he's not great or anything, but I think somebody like him probably has more potential than Grisham did. Grisham had his shot on SmackDown. He did announcing for many, many months back in 08, I think into 09 with Jim Ross. And again, Vince McMahon, he just fell out of favor with Vince. Vince would yell in his ear and just rip him to shreds, and just, he didn't want Todd Grisham on SmackDown anymore. And when that decision was made, they decided to put Michael Cole on Raw and SmackDown. So we have Grisham to thank for that. Maybe I won't wish him well then in his future endeavors. Well, I will say Grisham was better than Mike Adamley was. That is some level of praise. I know it's not high praise, but he'll do just fine. So best of luck to him as he moves on to ESPN. Time for the mailbag. I'm going to try to barrel through as many of these as possible and then call it quits so I can prepare for Armageddon here in New York. Kane from Australia writes in, not that Kane. He says, "Good day, mate." Actually, I should try to say it in the proper accent. "Good day, mate." I don't actually say that normally, he says, but since I am representing Australia, I thought I'd throw that in there. "No question from me, just letting you know where I am for your tally. Love the work." I didn't know I was keeping a tally. I just ask people, if you live abroad, that being outside of North America, write into me and let me know where you are listening from, because I'm just curious to know which countries are represented amongst the sound-off population. So obviously, Australia. I have a lot of listeners, actually, in Australia, and Kane is one of them. So thank you for writing in. Frank writes into the sound-off, "Hey, Solomonster, I've been a listener since episode 149. I am two-thirds of the Triple Threat, with the exception of iTunes. Don't worry, I'm getting there. Anyway, in the last sound-off, you said that Matt Hardy's incident is nowhere near a tragedy, his fans have been saying. You mentioned that Nancy and Daniel Benoit's death at the hands of Chris Benoit is a tragedy," which I did say that on Facebook. "My question for you is that, would you consider Chris Benoit himself to be a tragedy, because of the fact that he had severe brain damage from all the damage he took in his 20-year career and couldn't control himself from doing what he did?" Well, I argue that point. I am not debating the point that Chris Benoit had issues. Clearly, he had issues. Physical issues that manifested itself that related directly to what he did for a living. But to say that Benoit had absolutely no control over what he did is almost, if you say that out loud, it sounds as though, and I know this is not what you intended to do, but when you say something like that, you are essentially giving him an out. You are excusing his behavior. You are saying, well, it's not Chris Benoit's fault that he allegedly, I say allegedly because I'm not sure we're ever going to know for sure exactly what happened that day. You know, there are some people who still believe that Nancy, for whatever reason, killed Daniel, and then Chris Benoit found out and then killed her. I think that's pretty much been debunked, but I use the word allegedly. That he allegedly killed his wife and killed his kid all in one day, and that it was something that was out of his control. It was like the voices told him to do it. Chris Benoit had control over his emotions. Even before people started really seeing some bizarre behavior from Benoit, some people are well aware of the fact that Benoit abused Nancy, physically abused her, back in the day. I think even as early as the late 90s, there were reports of him striking her and stuff. So there was a pattern of behavior and violence from him that went back a number of years. It's not like Chris Benoit was some model citizen who never did a damn thing wrong, and then one day he just snapped and did what he did. Essentially, yes, he did snap and did what he did, which was completely heinous and ridiculous and unlike anything we would have expected from him. But let's not paint him out to be some sort of patron saint here, okay? He had a mean streak in him. He could be violent. He was violent with women before, something I have no tolerance for at all whatsoever. So excuse me, but I have no sympathy whatsoever for people who raise their hand to a woman. So is Chris Benoit himself a tragedy? You know what? Look, what happened to Daniel, 7-year-old boy who may well have been smothered by his father in his sleep, that's a tragedy. What happened to his wife? Who knows what was going on between her and him and if she instigated him. I'm sure she wasn't innocent over the years either in that relationship, but still, she got murdered. That's a tragedy. What happened to Chris Benoit? He took the coward's way out. Whatever happened in his brain, whatever was going on in his mind at the time, he thought that the only thing he could possibly do, for whatever reason, was murder his family, and then, like a coward, murder himself. Instead of just murdering himself and letting his wife and young son live to see another day, he killed them and killed himself. And to me, that's a cowardly act. The entire situation is a tragedy. What happened to the wife and son is a tragedy. What Chris did to himself is not a tragedy. It's something that I hope is avoided in the future with other people who have, you know, just like Chris, had a very hard career. You know, people like Mick Foley and people who sustained a lot of abuse to their head and their brains and suffered concussions over the years. I hope and pray to God that we don't see a repeat of this in the future. But Chris Benoit himself has nobody to blame but himself. You know, he opted to get into the wrestling business. He was always a small guy, so he said, you know what, in order to compete, I gotta take steroids. The guy was a steroid freak. He was juiced to the gills pretty much his entire career. Pretty much right up until the day he died. It was even more apparent in WWE than it was in WCW. He seemed to get bigger. He never got taller. He just got bigger and more juiced up and more gassed up. And the reality is, again, I don't want to get into this whole thing all over again, but the way I look at it, the wrestling business is culpable for a lot of things. Things that they perpetuate, promoters, things that maybe they don't outright say to performers, but it's kind of alluded to, hey, you might want to get bigger. You might want to work out a little bit more, wink, wink. All that happens. I'm not saying Vince McMahon and the wrestling business is not guilty. They are. They're all a bunch of sleazeballs. We already know that. Nobody forced Chris Benoit to become a professional wrestler. And if Benoit got into wrestling and felt that he couldn't compete naturally, that he had to be bigger in order to compete, in order to get noticed, then get the hell out of the wrestling business. Lance Storm did a great commentary several weeks back on a completely unrelated subject, but there is one key point here that I think is relevant. He was talking about this thing in mixed martial arts called testosterone replacement therapy, which actually I guess there's a wrestling connection to that too, because a lot of wrestlers also are on testosterone therapy due to years of steroid abuse. But in MMA, this is a big problem. You know, people get exemptions, they can get testosterone because it's a medical condition, because they need it. And Lance Storm argues that it's complete bullshit. You know, it's not fair that some guys are allowed to have testosterone replacement therapy. Why not all MMA fighters? Why not all give them the ability to take testosterone? Why? The people who need it claim they need it so that it's a level playing field. Bullshit! If you need it and you can't compete on a level playing field, then don't do mixed martial arts. It's kind of the same thing in wrestling. If you get into wrestling and you're a small guy, you can try to forge and blaze your own path like a Rey Mysterio Jr. did. And I'm not going to say whether Rey was on steroids or not. I have my own thoughts on that. But go look at Rey early in his career. Whatever he was or wasn't on, he was always small, okay? He could take all the steroids in the world. He was never going to get much bigger than what he was. And not everybody is a Rey Mysterio Jr. But he blazed his own path in the industry. Became one of the most successful performers of all time. A lot of very small guys, even somebody like Shawn Michaels, not as small as Rey Mysterio, but by wrestling standards back in the day, he was a pretty small guy. So was Bret Hart. They went through a lot of shit. They got held down for a long time. Hulk Hogan refused to drop the title to Bret Hart because he thought he was too small. He laughed at the idea. But the cream always rises to the top. Bret Hart became one of the best superstars of all time. Shawn Michaels became one of the best stars of all time. You do what you have to do. If Benoit loaded himself up on so many steroids, and if that had something to do with what he did, he's got nobody to blame but himself. That's not a tragedy. Again, words matter. Don't throw that word around so lightly. So that's my take on the whole thing. That's the long version. You got me on a rant here. I could talk about this all day, but I won't. So that's my thoughts on that whole thing. Derek from Missouri, on a lighter note, was listening to the sound off this week. I heard the question about CM Punk talking on the way to the ring and Rey Mysterio headbutting and talking. Anyway, it got me thinking about Stone Cold Steve Austin back in the day. All I ever saw him say was motherfucker and some bitch, and it seems he just repeated everything. Was he ever actually saying something all the way to the ring, or was he just mouthing all the curse words he could think of? I have no idea what Steve may have been saying. It always looked like maybe when he was getting in the ring, he was trying to amp himself up by saying something to the effect of, you know, let's go motherfucker or something like that. I honestly don't know. It always looked like random expletives to me, which is kind of like me on the way to work each day. Austin from Minnesota, dear Solomonster, if there was ever a situation where WWE brought back one of the retired title belts, which one would you think is the most logical, and why? And if there isn't one, why would you not want one brought back? I have been a listener since Sound Off 140, and am part of the Triple Threat. Well, if there's a reason why I wouldn't want one, it's because we don't need more championships. We need less championships. That's number one. Number two, if I was to bring one back, what would make the most sense? What would be the most realistic? Probably the light heavyweight, or the cruiserweight, whatever they want to call it, would be the most likely of the bunch. Every couple of years, there's talk of bringing back the division, but they never act on it. One of these days, I'm pretty sure they will. But they're certainly not bringing back hardcore wrestling, so I think that would disqualify the hardcore title. Jared from Pikeville, Kentucky writes in, so I was watching Raw when Kevin Nash and CM Punk had their little verbal debate. I noticed Nash said that, or rather, Nash said what sounded to me like, quote, you look like a short order cook from a Pikeville Waffle House. Well, I am from Pikeville, Kentucky. Could he possibly be talking about us? In fact, Kevin Nash was talking about you guys. Apparently TNA used to, and perhaps they still do, run house shows in the Pikeville area. And Kevin Nash was vocally against doing house shows for the company. So, in a way, that was kind of his little dig at his former employer that went over pretty much everybody's heads, except, I guess, the people in Pikeville, Kentucky. Rude Boy wants a shout-out for calling the Miz R-Truth team a year in advance. I have no recollection of this at all, but I'll take him at his word. So there you go. There's your shout-out to the Rude Boy. Jason writes in, he's been a fan since the mid-150s of the Sound Off, and he is a dual threat. No iTunes. Better get on that. He got back into WWE after The Miz won the title last year after not really watching wrestling at all since the heyday of WCW Monday Nitro. It's a long time. Number one, he says, why do a lot of people think heel champions need to be booked strongly with clean wins? I mean, aren't they cowardly by nature and will cheat and do heel things to win? Which brings me to an interesting observation. During Miz's reign, he had few to almost no clean wins, almost always looked cowardly with Alex Riley's help. Perfect heel stuff. So, why are they now booking Alberto Del Rio to look strong with clean wins lately? In fact, I can't recall him having any crap finishes yet. And he's even hurting people after the match. Even when Christian was World Heavyweight Champion, he had a couple of clean wins on SmackDown. Why are they booking some heels to be heelish winners and some to be stronger? It looks like The Miz would have been booked a bit stronger during his reign, or should have been. But even stranger, now Miz has been getting some clean wins lately. Interesting observation. As I mentioned, the mentality of the chicken shit heel champion who always cheats to win and such was popularized by Vince McMahon and the WWF, at least on a national stage. You know, I grew up, for example, as a young WWF fan thinking that that's what the heel champion did. He was afraid of everybody. He always took bumps and rarely got in any real offense. Was always scared of people, ducking challengers and stuff. Traditionally, if you look at the champions in the old NWA, back in the days of, you know, Harley Race and Ric Flair early on, although I guess Flair early on was a babyface, but, you know, Ric Flair took all those Flair flops back in the day too, but he was booked strongly as someone who wouldn't run away from opponents, and he scored plenty of clean wins. You know, Flair would not run away most of the time. He would come right at you. He would come right at Dusty Rhodes. He would come right at Terry Funk. He would come right at Ricky Steamboat. So to say that it's normal for a heel champion to never get a clean win and behave like a coward is really, it's just a matter of perspective, I think, more than anything else. It's the way that you're booked in a particular territory and it goes back many years. It was the Vince McMahon way of doing things compared to the way things were done in Crockett and in the NWA and the early days of WCW. It was just two different mentalities. So depending on what type of wrestling you grew up with, you're going to have two completely different perspectives on what a heel champion should be. In terms of Del Rio, I actually like what they're doing with him. I think they need a heel champion that people can actually believe is a badass. You know, nobody believes The Miz is a badass. They're starting to come around to him, I think, but when he was champion, nobody bought into him. I mean, he had enough trouble with Jerry Lawler. Never got a clean win over Randy Orton. Never got a clean win over John Cena, that I can recall. And maybe for The Miz, that was fine, because The Miz, as champion back then, was looked at as a chicken shit. But for Del Rio, who's been, you know, injuring people with the cross arm bar, and he's the chosen one, and they're going to go all the way with him, you got to make him feel like a badass and not like a fucking pussy who's going to run away from John Cena and run away from everybody. So instead of running away, granted, he attacked him from behind, but, you know, Del Rio didn't waste any time. When Cena won his match on Monday night, he beat the shit out of him. He attacked him from behind. He kicked him. The referees pulled him away. He broke free. He kicked him some more, threw him out of the ring. Like you said, he's been hurting people with his finishing maneuver. He did it to Rey Mysterio. You know, he beat Morrison with his hold. He beat Daniel Bryan. He beat him with the cross armbar? I can't recall now. Actually, I think he beat Morrison by pin and beat Daniel Bryan maybe with the armbar. But regardless, he's had a lot of very strong, clean victories. And I think, quite frankly, we need to see more of that. You know, not every heel is going to be booked as a badass. We need at least a couple. And this guy's your champion. You're trying to get him over. He shouldn't be running away from everybody. I mean, there are going to be situations where Del Rio runs away. He's not going to be a badass all the time. He's going to run away and be a pussy here and there. But I have absolutely no problem with the way they're booking him so far. And I wish they would book more champions that way. Maybe it would actually bring some prestige back to the belts. Orlando writes into the Sound Off. Dear Solomon, sir, I went back and listened to Sound Off 132, and you were discussing who would be the best opponent for The Undertaker at WrestleMania. I guess when he goes 20-0. You were saying that a face John Cena would be the best way to go, and I agree. Now looking ahead at the booking of The Rock against Cena for WrestleMania 28, would that be better business than Taker Cena at Mania? I love the Sound Off. Been a fan since episode 84, and a friend on Facebook. Appreciate all of your insight. Well, thank you for that. If you're asking me what's better for business, Rock vs. Cena or Undertaker Cena, Rock vs. Cena by a country mile. I mean, there's a lot of, I think there would be a lot of interest in Undertaker Cena, and you can make money with that match, and it would be the biggest Undertaker match you can do, even bigger than a Sting match. And I would love to see Sting come over to WWE and have a match with The Undertaker. It may not be a great match, but there would be something about it I think that would be cool and fresh. And it's one of those last real fantasy matchups that we could have, even though both guys are physically broken down. But a babyface John Cena, let's say at WrestleMania 30 even, doesn't even have to be next year, in Madison Square Garden, getting booed out of the building against The Undertaker, who's going to beat him anyway? It's not like Cena's going to be there. He's the babyface. He's getting booed. He's going to beat The Undertaker. Everybody's going to be pissed off. The point is that John Cena is not going to beat The Undertaker. John Cena is, in fact, going to be defeated. But you could get some pretty cool near falls in that match. You know, like I've said before, you know, there's a spot where Cena gets him in the STF. And not that I think anybody would ever believe Undertaker would tap out. But, you know, a well-placed attitude adjustment for a near fall. I mean, it would be a really, really good match. More so, I think, than Undertaker against the heel John Cena, which is just not going to happen. But if you're saying that that match would be possibly bigger business than Rock Cena, absolutely not. I mean, there's no comparison between the two. They're going to do big, 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 big business next year. And if Undertaker is you know, hell-bent on wrestling a match and not holding off for a future WrestleMania to go 20-0, well, I guess you're just going to have to find another opponent for him. And if it's not Sting, perhaps somebody like Sheamus, although Sheamus now is a babyface. So, you know, I guess you could still do babyface against babyface with Undertaker beating him. I don't know if that's the way they're going to go, but of the two matches, Rock Cena, just no comparison. Come on. Marcus writes in. He's one of the longtime listeners of the Sound Off. He said it was his birthday on the 26th. That would have been yesterday. Is there any way I could get a birthday shout-out? I would appreciate it. Absolutely. You're one of our longtime listeners. So happy birthday, Marcus. Hope you got everything you were hoping for yesterday. And I know you do now because you got the Sound Off. And really, what more do you possibly need? That's all you need. You don't even need any other birthday gifts. You got the podcast, man. That's all you need. So we're going to wrap this mailbag up here. Episode 176 in the books. If you have questions for me, feed me. Feed the monster. Email me at the Solomonster. All one word, the Solomonster. Don't forget the word the. It's very important because otherwise you're emailing some poor soul at solomonster@gmail.com who's probably getting pretty pissed off right now. So the Solomonster@gmail.com is the email address. As I mentioned earlier, my thanks to everybody who helped me get to 1,000 followers and beyond now. I think we're up to 1,002 on Twitter. And you know what? It's a fun thing. If you like Twitter, if you don't like Twitter, whatever the case is, just go on there. Follow at Solomonster. And there's some funny, humorous stuff, breaking news updates, updates on anything I post, whether it's a new podcast, a new mailbag. Twitter is one of the first places it goes up. And you'll want to get on there. So that's Twitter.com/Solomonster. And, of course, Facebook.com/TheSolomonster. We'll see if I have any other funny hurricane-related stuff to post on there this weekend. You have to friend me on there if you want to see that. And get in on all the live blogging and the discussion that takes place during Raw on Monday nights, which can sometimes get somewhat heated, sometimes gets a little stupid. Sometimes there actually is some intelligent discussion as well if you can, you know, sift through all the other stuff. So get on Facebook, and of course you can subscribe to this very podcast in iTunes. Type in Solomonster Sounds Off. Should come right up. Subscribe, and you will be among the first to get the show each week when it is uploaded. So that's going to do it for this week's show. I've got to go prepare here. And if you saw my hurricane survival kit that I posted, I have a bag of potato chips I am just waiting to dive into. I'm very excited about this. So, yep, we have some bad weather coming. I'm sure it's much ado about nothing, although in some of the areas, I shouldn't say that. There are some people who are going to get hit hard by this storm. I think a lot of the hysteria here in the New York tri-state area when it comes to some of the, you know, the inland places, whether it's the city, if it's, you know, Brooklyn and places like that, I think there's going to be a lot of water, a lot of wind. You know, wind damage, I guess, is the one thing I really worry about. But there are other areas who are right in the eye of the storm, coastal areas, places in Long Island and parts of New Jersey and whatnot. And if you are among the people, I know we have people listening to the show who are in those areas, who are in the area even where I am, who probably are in maybe an evacuation zone. I am not in the evacuation zone. I am in one zone below that. So what they're saying is you have Zone A, Zone B, and Zone C. And if you are in Zone A, you are already under a mandatory evacuation order. I am in Zone B, so hopefully if it doesn't get any worse, I won't have to flee. But for those people who have had to evacuate and who are boarding up their homes and their windows and stuff, and it's a very serious situation, I want everybody, I say it every week, be well and stay safe, and I mean it more so this week. Mother Nature can be a real bitch, and she has proven that here on the East Coast this week, whether it was the earthquake or the hurricane or any of the other bizarre weather events that we have seen this summer. We've had a lot of ups and downs, a lot of extremes. But if you are in the eye of the storm, please stay safe. Just do what you're told. If they say get the hell out of there, don't be like some of these idiots on the news who say, well, we're going to stay anyway. And you know, you don't know better than the people in charge. You might think you do, but you really don't. So stay safe, and hopefully we'll be back next week intact. And we'll be doing episode 177 injury-free right here next week. So until then, I will leave you with an appropriate tune. See you next week.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake. Birds, snakes, and airplanes. Many bruises, not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world to the zombies. Dummies to your own knees. Feed it up and not speak. Run no streams. Run ladder. Stop the clatter with fear. Fight down high. Fire in a fire. Represent a seven game. In a government for hire. In a combat. It's the end of the world as we know it.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joe from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SCScoops.com.